when I was about 20 years old, Dad and I sat down at the pub, and Dad walked me through the story of his cancer so far. He told me about how when he was first diagnosed with lymphoma, there was no treatment available other than aggressive chemotherapy. He told me how he'd come to terms with the concept of his own mortality. And most shockingly for me at the time, he warned me that despite the more recent treatment options available, it was unlikely he was going to die of old age. That moment, to me, captures a lot of what made Dad the person he was. This was someone who was able to quickly and abruptly get deep, to be vulnerable, and willing to turn and face what scared him the most. This is someone who was often broadly, but not acutely aware of the effect his words would have on people. It must have been quite a sight to see me flailing and struggling to keep up, as Dad then quite quickly moved on to discussing the benefits of euthanasia, what the current government was getting wrong, and what was currently flowering in his garden. And that was Dad. No topic off bounds, nothing too scary to talk about, and no reason not to enjoy every bit of life that you can while you're still on this earth. It was hard not to get swept up in his enthusiasm for his interests. Though particularly when we were young, we had no choice in the matter. Every family holiday down south or up north would involve waking up in the back of the car as Dad would pull over yet again in the middle of nowhere to trace through the bush and see what wildflowers he could find. Sometimes we'd go with him and he'd excitedly show us egg and bacon plants, help us press the trigger plants, and find ever-evasive orchids. Sometimes he'd go off on his own, leaving the whole family waiting in the car for 20 minutes in attempt to take a Pink Floyd blasting, but none of us even liked at the time. That also provided us with some of the richest musical experiences I think a child could ever hope to grow up with. There are recordings somewhere that Dad made on his reel-to-reel tape player of him playing the blues while I, as a two-year-old, blast along on a recorder. Photos of Dad playing guitar with some family holidays. He and my auntie Rochelle found my first trumpet, taught me how to play the blues, and even wrote a song for the primary school band to play that featured me and my cousin Mark. As David and I grew up, Dad was delighted to have managed to create his very own family band. I can't imagine how bizarre it must have been to watch these people who used to feed and bathe go on to play and take solos on the music he's written. I know I at least didn't make it easy on him though, and must have made a few rehearsals pretty awkward in my strong teenage years. Playing Dad's music as an adult has been one of the delights of my life. And I'm so grateful for such incredible experiences, memories, music making, and late night post-gig kebabs. Dad taught me how to cook, how to roast spices, how to serve dishes to Mum with coconut and chilli in them, even though she thinks she doesn't like them. It took a real while to realise how odd it was that he almost exclusively cooked Indian and Thai, in spite of our heritage, until I realised that Nana was so good at making Italian food and made it for us so often. But there was rarely a need or a want for Dad to cook the same stuff. But he was careful to make clear that he could make her food, with many meals and photos of gnocchi to prove it in recent years. I could go on for hours about what Dad was interested in and good at, and I planned for the rest of my life. None of that matters, though, when I compare it to what you taught me about how to be a person living in the world. Dad showed me what it was like to bravely and almost recklessly wear your heart on your sleeve. He taught me how to pick my battles, and how to be proud of myself while always wanting and striving to do better. He taught me the power of humility, of humour, and of honesty. He taught me how to be open to being wrong and willing to change my mind, even if it didn't always actually play out like that. He taught me to never be afraid of being afraid. I would describe that as bravery, but I never quite managed to convince him of that one. I know he was proud of me because he told me 1,000 times. I know he loved me because he told me 1,000 times. So today, I'm honouring Dad by wearing my heart on my sleeve, and I hope it makes others feel brave enough to do the same like he did for me.
Andrew wrote his eulogy, and he emailed it to me while I was still in the stage where you're sort of mentally planning all of the things you want to say, but you haven't quite figured out how to write it all down yet. My heart sank a little bit when I read it, because I knew he quintessentially captured so many of the amazing aspects of Dan's personality, and I thought there might not be much more for me to learn. I think what's amazing, though, is that I'm sure if we asked any of you here today to stand up and talk, you'd be able to capture a lot of his things as well. As Andrew said, this was the openness of Dad's personality. It was the heart on his sleeve, the honesty and integrity he expressed in every part of himself. In honour of Dad, I want to try and talk openly now about some really hard things, because I know he wouldn't want us to shy away from it. So 2019 has been a big year. In November of 2018, it was confirmed Dad's lymphoma had transformed into an aggressive type, and he needed urgent treatment. Over his 60th birthday, and into early 2019, he endured chemotherapy. Through March and April, he was admitted to Hollywood Hospital for a stem cell transplant. In May, his dad and our Poppy passed away. Still in May, we received the news that the stem cell transplant hadn't worked. His cancer was progressing quickly. 3 months after that, Dad and Mum worked with doctors to find new treatments and new hope that more could be done. Each day became unpredictable. When one piece of news was promising, another unforeseeable complication would stand in the way. On the 17th of August, after fighting harder than could ever expect of anyone, Dad passed on. I feel ridiculously nervous talking about this. Thought I'd be better off looking back at the happy memories of my past Dad that we all know and love. But when I sat down to write, I realised I didn't actually need to look very far back. I was reflecting on the last 9 months, and it was clear to me that even through his pain and through our despair, Dad's amazing personality and love for the world never wavered. In December, I asked him how he was coping with the side effects of his chemotherapy. He told me that he loves my mum, that she was a remarkable person, that with her by his side, it was all going to be okay. Through January and February, he carefully planned his treatment cycles so he could play gigs with his exciting new band at the Perth Fringe Festival. It was amazing. In April, when he was recovering from the stem cell transplant, he told me to download Words for Friends and play a game with him, because he kept losing to Andrew, but he reckoned he could still win against me. And he definitely could. In May, I watched his heart break as he said goodbye to his own dad. And I saw the start of a slow healing process as he found solace in his Italian roots and the love of his family. A few weeks later, I heard the profound anger and exhaustion in his voice as he explained to me the stem cell transplant had worked. But 24 hours later, we talked again and he told me he was willing to try other treatment options, that Mum, Andrew and me were the motivation that he needed. This immeasurable strength and persistence is something Dad exemplified in every aspect of his life. Whether it was his work, his music, his gardening, cooking, church, family, or any of his friendships, Paul Joy would commit his heart and soul to everything he did. What really blew me away in these last 3 months was the intensity with which he loved life. Even as he became more unwell, Dad would take endless joy in the companionship of Mum, the beauty of his garden, conversations with family and friends. When all was said and done, Dad said goodbye to us with gentle acceptance, reassurance, and a kind of sad happiness or happy sadness. It's impossible to put into words, but it's going to stay with me forever. I'd like to finish by reading part of a short letter I gave to Dad a week before he passed. More than anything, I just want to say thank you for being the best dad that a kid could want and an outstanding role model to Andrew and I. From day dot, you taught us it's okay for boys to cry, to express ourselves shamelessly, to not be afraid to ask big questions and have hard conversations. Your relationship with Mum, the way you care for each other, is something to aspire to. You taught us to take huge amounts of joy in the small things. Our conversations in the backyard or on the front porch taught me to sit with patience, to sit quietly and listen to the leaves rustle and the birds sing. You taught me the endless fun to be found in spending an afternoon roasting and grinding spices for a curry that takes 5 hours to make and 5 minutes to eat. You brought music into our lives, and for that I can never thank you enough. So much of what I value and who I am is because of your influence. And I think that's partly why I'm so scared to say goodbye. All I can say is, Dad, I love you and I cherish you and thank you for everything. Mm-hmm.
Do you call that a buddy? You don't know the response? Do you call that a buddy? As we heard earlier, there is a shared experience of musicians that they have, telling their parents that when they grow up, they want to be a musician. The parent responds, well, you can't have it both ways. Here's a reflection on behalf of the music community that he was a part of. He was part of many integrated communities, but we'll get to that in a sec. As a young boy, I have memories of various long hairs playing music in our lounge room or asbestos back room. Our parents must have elicited my oldest brother to babysit, but I pleaded to jam along on my imaginary large one-piece drum kit, which was actually a deteriorating vinyl Jason recliner rocker. Paul was one of the unwashed that breezed through our home on these occasions, looking like Jethro Tull's Ian Anderson from the Songs of Wood era. In fact, I recall my childhood shattering when I heard the word shit accidentally exclaimed, which was uttered from Paul in our backyard. I recall hearing the sound of thunder while a bunch of pigeons flew away in panic. I think that was also the last word I heard him say in church when I spoke to him. So thank you, Paul, for the continuation of Christian guilt. After Paul having musical journeys with my older sibling and others, some here today, you would know, decades later I somehow hooked up with him and he invited me to come and record music at his house in the later 90s on his reel-to-reel tape machine. When I inquired about the big wooden box in the corner that housed several Medicine rotating speakers, he said, here, I'll show you. He sat at his Hammond organ and at a decibel reading that actually hurt my genitalia and changed the way one would digest food in the future, he conjured up the introduction to Whiter Shade of Pale. I recall that ferocious lion beast growling in the corner, shaking the joyous walls, and feeling genuinely frightened by this huge, ancient wooden vessel of sonic warfare. It was then that I thought, yeah, this guy's going to be interesting, and of course he was. That famed Leslie speaker would eventually become the cursed music monolith that we despised, and would contribute to our tinnitus-tinged eardrums and lacerated L3s and L4s as we had to help Paul drag the sodden thing up rickety stairs on the sides of crumbling heritage buildings. In 2000, he invited me to join an old-timey blues band called Tin Dog after my whopper days and the burnout of being in the Perth original pub scene. It was there that I received further musical education, inspiration, experiences and friendships with the Tin Dog members Bill, Bob, Reuben, and associated drummers thereafter. It opened up things like Fairbridge Festival and even the National Festival Clune. Paul's energy, passion, work ethic and enjoyment partly drove that band and myself on. This cauldron gave me the confidence, inspiration and knowledge to go and make a crack of it on my own. Over time, Paul's energy and passion has impacted on a range of musicians. Many are here today. Some are living elsewhere, but most have expressed a similar memory of passion, drive, humour, intellect, authenticity and fun, and they were infected when playing with Paul. The theologian described a person's spirituality as an individual's innate desire and energy driving one's thoughts and actions. These sometimes non-negotiable desires are a balance of passion and fire, and also of protection and integration. A person's spirituality is how they deal with these energies in an integrated way. I think Paul possessed both these energies, but his spirituality was informed by something bigger and outside of himself, and it created a strong sense of integration between many facets of his life. This was manifest in his love of music, the natural world, and authentic and messy connections with others. Paul wrote an enormous amount of music to be sung in churches, protests, or any groups of people wanting to express their spiritual desires, struggles, and the paradox of the human condition within it. Paul's music was a spiritual integration of himself as a musician, husband, father, friend, band member, church elder, scientist, and geek. intellectual and politically aware observer, all inspired by the sometimes unknowable mysteries of God. His songs are an integration of the divine and the profane. Whether belted out to a church congregation or a drunken pub of boganic non-handwashers, his songs are love letters, letters of complaint, pleadings, doubts, questions, celebrations, statements of grace and perseverance to his God. Whether in our humble Mount Hawthorne public church hall or beer halls, these songs make people cry, twist and frug, be vexed, or may you prostrate in front of wildflowers, he points out en route to a country gig. Like the ultimate Old Testament loosener, David, Paul was compelled to channel music to both celebrate and relish, or rail and weep at God. Paul did it in his own profound words and music, but he could also do it through Mahalia Jackson, Howlin' Wolf, and Roosevelt Sykes. Being next to Paul's talent and energy was like being in the presence of a hot flame, at times singeing any close guitar player's forearm by that solar wind of that Leslie speaker. Paul's fire would be fed by the fuel of other musicians on stage, and he'd wind up playing like a madman, taking you with him whether you wanted to or not. He was infectious, generous, played for the sake of playing. In the last couple of projects he accomplished, I stood on stage listening to that band charging through some profound blues and gospel from the civil rights period that Paul curated. I would look over at him and he'd flash me that grin like a hyped kid demolishing watermelon between breaths after belting over from the best swim he'd ever had at the beach. I'd stand there and I'd feel proud of him to get that authentic childlike a play smile, and it would keep my flame on. Paul, on behalf of the music community spanning over decades, and for me almost 20 years, and you people are all a part of it, we're proud to have known you. And as Mississippi Fred McDowell exclaimed, you keep our lamps trimmed and burning. Your earth lamp is extinguished, we are sad, but we are grateful, and we finally say goodbye for now. Thanks. Oh, and by the way, here's that lead that I borrowed in 1996. I'll give it to the family.
Thank you. it's my great privilege to share many conversations with Paul about what God meant to us, and to share in being part of a community with him that wrestled together with who God was and how to respond to that. And that song we just sang is something of an anthem for our community, because Paul's lyrics express the heart of the God we share. Grace is a word that gets chucked around pretty lightly in God talky stuff, but it wasn't a light word for Paul. Paul's God was and is a God of unconditional presence and acceptance, a God of healing and wholeness. This was a God who enters the darkest places with us, before us and behind us, and we are never ever separated from that loving presence. And this God knows us, not with the terror of a searchlight hunting out our dark secrets, but with the sensuous presence of a lover's embrace. Paul knew he was a flawed man, and he knew that God knew he was a flawed man, and he still experienced God as a loving presence. And even in the pain of the last few months and the devastation of facing his own death, he spoke of experiencing God gently walking beside him. Paul made no pretense of knowing what lay beyond death, but he trusted that the God of life would continue walking beside him there too. Faith was never an easy fix for Paul. He was profoundly respectful of those who didn't share his sense of God. And he trusted the God of life, but he didn't buy into any nicey-nicey Jesus talk. Certainly nothing that claimed to take the pain away. God was present in the darkness, not removing the darkness. And in the God in the darkness was found also in others, in a community of people stumbling along, trying to follow Jesus. Paul's faith was formed in conversation. It feels very lopsided to talk about it without him having the right of reply. So you're welcome afterwards to channel his spirit and just nail me with, you know, some pointed observations. Even from hospital, the last talk I gave at church, he listened to the recording online and emailed me some comments. Ever the scientist, Paul investigated his faith from every angle. He read the great atheists, and he knew that he could neither prove nor disprove God. But something continued to convict him that the God he encountered through the stories of Jesus held truth. The person of Jesus inspired and comforted him. The teachings of Jesus challenged and sustained him for the work of making a better world, and particularly for paying attention to those who were marginalised or forgotten. God's love was not just talked about, but enacted, and enacted together. Paul saw the face of Christ in others, and he became the face of Christ, the face of Christ, the face of love for many of us. So my hope is that as we remember Paul, we will know ourselves also, loved beyond ourselves, loved beyond what we deserve, by the greatest love, the love that knows us completely, and from which nothing can separate us. We're going to see some slides from Paul's life that the family have put together. For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter. A time to be born and a time to die. a time to plant, and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak. Our hope rests on God, who we believe raised Jesus from the dead and will lift each one of us to life beyond our earthly death. Merciful God, receive into your arms your faithful servant Paul. Cast away his burdens and make him whole through the love of Jesus. Released from all suffering, may he be welcomed home to you. Paul, we lovingly and reverently return your body to the elements from which it came. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. We leave you now in peace and are grateful you were in our lives. Remain standing as we sing a final song.
Thank you.
Thank you.